Well, it's a soggy, rather close Monday night in Christiania in central Copenhagen, and it's got a real start of the week, low-key feel to it. Just walking up here down the street, suddenly goes a little bit dark and there are posters all over the walls, and suddenly there are stone teenagers stumbling with funny smiles on their faces on the pavement. And here this evening, well, yeah, there's probably 1,000 people gathered for a beer, some are having a smoke. There are people kind of bumping into each other at the relish stalls, not quite sure where they are. There's a guy next to us who's kind of talking to himself very happily and enjoying a beer and a smoke. And it's a very relaxed feel. It's a very downbeat feel. But this isn't really the interesting part of Christiania, fun as it is to be here. What's really interesting is the 1,000 people living all over this complex of old battlements and old fortress structures, and who came here 40 years ago and invented a community in the middle of the city. And somehow, against all the odds, they've survived. And they're going to turn 40 and rather adult this September. Cannot kill us, we are part of you, goes the song. One of several Christiania anthems. And it's true, Christiania is an important part of Danish life, and the way Denmark has tolerated this enclave of outcasts has helped it feel good about itself. Christiania celebrates its 40th birthday on the 26th of September. Quite an achievement for a community that for most of the last four decades has appeared to be just a few weeks away from being closed down. It's always been an eclectic mix of hippies, squatters, anarchists and drifters. Its greatest success has been to find a way for all these people to coexist, and to do so largely independent of the Danish state. In this programme, I'm going to be looking at how this countercultural commune has avoided being shut down, in what ways it's changed since its creation, and how it's stayed true to its roots. The BBC has been a regular visitor to Christiania, so we'll be listening to reports from the last four decades. But I'll also be mining the archive of oral histories collected for the citizens of the Freetown by Amy Staracheski. We'll hear the story of a group of young people who seized a rare opportunity to live a different way of life and made it happen through hard work, through tolerance, and through talking. Lots and lots of talking.
Christiania is the only place left in Copenhagen where you can walk in the middle of the city and yet still feel you're out in the country. Kim Løvetand came here just over a year ago, and he lives in a big black plywood football that he built himself.
The Tonight programme visited Christiania in 1976, 5 years after it was founded. It happened because of a housing crisis. In the late 1960s and early 1970s, there was a shortage of affordable housing in Copenhagen. The emerging youth countercultural movement responded to this by squatting many of the empty old buildings in the city's docklands. Simultaneously, the Danish Ministry of Defence closed down its huge 18th century military barracks in the area. Locals began burning the barracks' fences so they could get in and create a playground for their kids. They were joined by squatters, recently evicted by the police from their homes. Then, in 1971, the Danish underground magazine Hørvet Bladet wondered whether there might be room for everyone in Christiania. Within weeks, a few hundred souls made their way there, and the experiment began. Niels Vest was one of the early visitors to this squat, and recorded his memories for the Christiania archive.
It was magic in some way, because you came out to this village only 5-10 minutes away from the city hall, and with no lights in the streets, very few lights. You could see through windows, mostly candles and oil lamps. And then you could hear music in some distant way. You could, of course, smell it, were people living there, because wet wood was burning everywhere. this was so big, most of the squats were just one or two houses, still within this rather small area, that there suddenly could be this empty barracks area, which you in one way had not noticed. It was like some kind of white spot on a map, you know, just like what does it look in the inner of the Himalayas or inner parts of Borneo or New Guinea. And you came really to a strange fairy tale land.
If it was a fairy tale land, it certainly had its dark side, according to Alan Lauston, who has also contributed his story to the archive.
The bus didn't even go out all the way out here. It was really Klondike. It was like Wild West to come out here. There was no tourists at all. I mean, it was like a place nobody dared to go out there.
Given how inhospitable the place appeared, it's not surprising that the Danish government was completely taken by surprise when people started breaking through the walls surrounding the base and setting up home in the abandoned buildings.
Well, my name is Kjell Olesen, and in 71 I became Minister of Defence. And shortly after I took over office, my associates came to my office and said, well, we have some troubles. You know, we have the barracks out there, the Christianshavn, and 200 young people had taken it over. I said, why bother me with such a minor problem? Call the police, ask them to throw them out. And then later on I discovered that the problem was bigger than that.
Kjell Olesen was new in the post and told me that when he realised the scale of the problem, he decided the situation called for his personal supervision.
I went up there. They didn't see me. I just wanted to have a look. And then I discovered that my predecessor had no plans. He just ordered this huge area to be emptied. I very soon reached the decision, I want no confrontation. Because I also discovered that something was going on out there in Christiania, as they called it, which is very important to study. I discovered that there was a warmness, that there was a spirit that of pioneers, that I said by myself, well, it must have a chance. And I to contact to my colleague, the Minister of Social Affairs, and especially with a woman called Signe Brühl, who had been in contact with Christiania from the very beginning. And we three sat there in the apartment of the Minister of Social Affairs one evening, and then we wrote a piece of paper with the headline, A Social Experiment.
Signe Brühl has also contributed her memories to the Christiania archive. Her initial reaction was not quite so positive.
At that time, I was leader of a drug addict place. Mm. And at that time, many of the people I didn't know before came asking me for help because they didn't have anything, any place to stay, and they were thrown out because they were drug addicts and so. So we had them in our institution, or it was not an institution, it was a big flat. So when Christiania opened up in 71, they were some of the first who came out there because there were plenty of buildings. So they invited me to come out there to see it. And I thought, oh my God, if this beautiful area is invaded by drug addicts and people who cannot take care of themselves, then they will lose the whole thing. And I had a meeting with these three ministers, and I said, I think we should try and give them a period where they can try their ideas of 3 years. So we made a deal for a certain time, 3 years. So we have to see what is going to happen in these 3 years.
Getting an agreement from the government to live there turned out to be one of the easier problems to deal with in those early years, especially as the hard Danish winter set in. Niels Vest.
When it became winter again, many of the women in the first years in Christiania, in these very, very cold houses, got inflammations in their abdomen and in some cases caused that they could not get a children. And it was very cold out there where we lived. We used half of the day just to chop wood or collect water. There was no electricity. And we had to have homemade stoves for the heating. But it was, of course, romantic.
Solens varme, månens magt, ærer jordens regenter. Fylder krop og sjæle ud. Dit bud, dit bud, hvad du nu forventer.
Christiana, they argue, has been a unique social testbed, enabling people like Kim to put into practice their own highly original designs for living.
It got an organic shape, you know. It's like the fruit, it's like the moon, and it's a sort of a religion behind it. The Indians and the Eskimos will live in houses like this.
How long did it take you to build it?
Something like 3 or 4 weeks to build it. I had to carry everything up here on the hill, so it took a long time, you know.
And what's it made of?
It's made of a plywood, and inside we'll find the reflecting material to send the light and the heat back.
And where do you get the materials from?
Most of it are just from when they're taking down houses in Copenhagen, because they're too old. They're not, what will you call it, reused material. So it only cost me 400 kroners.
Which would be?
I don't know how much it is. In
about time. £50.
Yeah.
The military buildings have been gutted, and there was a lot of work to do to make them habitable again. And of course, being poor, there wasn't much money around. The existing buildings were modified and new buildings created, mostly from reclaimed material. And this tradition of eclectic self-built houses remains strong in Christiania today. I was given a tour of the houses by one of Christiania's resident architects, Mette Prague. Just looking around casually, the houses in Christiania at one level all look completely different as individual as the people who built them. But Are there some common themes to the kind of vernacular architecture of this place that have emerged over the last 30, 40 years?
I think one of the things is that it is a place where you can put in your dreams. And also many of the houses also shows that people come there, some of them in a bad condition, that they needed a space where they could build up themselves. And then they started up with a little room. And building your own house, making your own place, is a part of this, that you get yourself better and you build up your nice place. And here, many of the people, their house here is the first place where they have felt at home.
So it's a kind of architecture and building as therapy.
Yeah, it is.
Have there been any notoriously unsuccessful building projects? People have overreached themselves or found stuff doesn't work, or how about that?
Some of the first houses was not successfully because people didn't have that much experience and didn't know where to ask for help. So they built some really bad construction where it started to rapping very fast.
Right.
But also sometimes the house take maybe 10 years to build. So there are also this story that a man who wanted to build a new house for his wife and his kid, and so they ended up divorced before this house was finished.
But Mette told me that housing wasn't just a practical experience. There was an underlying philosophy that has informed her practice.
One of the things I've learned from here is that if you want to want people to take responsibility, they have to have a certain room where they can, space where they can decide themselves. Because if you give them a very narrow room, people will not take part of this place. So it's important that you say, okay, here you can play around and we don't care about you. Because if there's too many rules, if we care about this, we care about this, we care about this, it will be that narrow that people don't take responsibility about it. So That's what I use in my daily practice today.
Christiania has attempted to create a society with fewer rules, but its guiding principle has been the maximum of individual liberty without impinging on the liberty of others. It's a juggling act that has proved very difficult.
The critics of Christiania point to the prevalence of drug taking. Although they're sensitive to filming, the drug pushers are there to be seen in the main square every day, touting for business.
In this square, most of the dope dealing is going on, but it's mostly soft drugs like hashes, because we're kind of allowed soft drugs. But we are very much against hard drugs like morphine and speed and so on.
As Tina Brühl mentioned earlier, illegal drugs were part of the scene in Christiania from the very start. But as the collective became more permanent, the incidence of hard drug use grew. Here's Tina again.
Then I discovered that there were many drugs, not hashes, only hashes, but also hard drugs. So we had a discussion what to do. And then they decided that it was allowed, they would say to the authorities, we allow hash selling, but we will not accept people who are taking hard drugs. So they made a blockade, and that was very famous all over the country, because they succeeded.
Do a lot of people here take drugs, though? We have to see it from two point of views, you know, we've got the soft and the strong drugs.
Mm.
But it's allowed to take the soft ones like hashes. But not very many is taking hard drugs no more.
What do you do if they do insist on taking hard drugs?
Yeah, there's a good example over there. That's a house where there was like 20 junkies in here. And we paid that ourselves to get them cleaned up. And then we took them down to Egypt, because we saw that right there in the middle of the desert, there wouldn't be any chances to get dope.
They went to Egypt. Oh my God. They went to Egypt after they have been, detoxicated. And then they went to Egypt. And I think they had a very good trip there. But then when they came back, some of them went back to the junk. But many of them were then integrated. And that's when Christiania is based.
So we took care of the junkies and kicked the pushers out. And when the cleaned up junkies came back from Egypt, they moved in and with a good example helped the other ones to get clear of dope.
So you're saying that the community actually cured them of hard drugs?
Yeah, something like 15 persons at that time.
But the most visible result of this war on hard drugs was the establishment of Pusher Street. This is one of the first streets you come to in Christiania, and it's lined with stands selling many different kinds of cannabis, marijuana, hashish and weed. Niels Vest again.
In one way, we all of us felt that it was ridiculous to have this ban on cannabis products. On the other hand, when it was illegal, then those who were selling cannabis also had contacts with illegal or criminal circles in the Copenhagen criminal underground. We said if we should keep out the hard drug dealers, then we must have some kind of alliance with those who are standing day and night in the street trying to sell cannabis.
Kjell Olesen.
They have from the very beginning said that we want to smoke our marijuana. Various ministers of justice have ordered the police to do something about it. And there have been some fightings, yes. And they have closed down the Pusher Street, as you know, and they disappear, the police, and then it turns up again. And it's a part of it.
Christiania continues to hold fast to its policy of not accepting hard drugs in the Free Town, while permitting the sale and consumption of marijuana. The open hash market has existed now for almost 30 years and has attracted the attention of the police, but much more worryingly brought a more violent kind of visitor to the area. Lisa Ortegena is an artist who lived in Christiania during the 80s. Her surname comes from the house she stayed in, and she was there during one of the most violent times in Christiania's history.
At that time, Hells Angels and similar biker gang called Bullshit was fighting against each other about dominance in the market, and a lot of people were getting killed, and a lot of people who were not at all involved in all that would be threatened, and it was very difficult to fight it.
Difficult, not least, because Christiania is self-policing. How are they to deal with these violent, gun-wielding criminals who were living among them without resorting to violence themselves? The answer, Lisa remembers, came through talk. The residents of Christiania held an extraordinary general meeting in the Grey Hall, attended by hundreds of people. They invited the biker gang, and in a show of defiance, they turned up. Over the course of one of the longest meetings ever held in Christiania, the gang was confronted with many of the crimes it had committed by the people it had committed them against.
So after all this palaver and screaming and shouting and crying and breaking down and almost violence that went on for, I think, what was 24 hours, different people in who were accused were sort of put up against each other and ended up in fights against each other. And at the end, it was like seeing the breakdown of what came across as just this completely psychopathic, violent culture. Yeah, it was quite sort of a unique event in Christiania, and stuff like that happens there that just doesn't happen anywhere else. And yeah. Not so many people know about it.
Over the years, Pusher Street has evolved to become a place that's both central to Christiania, but also slightly at odds with its generally friendly nature. And there are practical reasons for keeping it going, as Sanka Guha discovered in 1988 in the Rough Guide to Copenhagen.
How big is the industry? How much money is it making every day here in Christiania?
Oh, I wouldn't say. Maybe 5,000 people come through the gate here every day, and half of them smoke. And bring maybe out 1 or 2 gram. So that's a lot. It's quite a lot.
I have heard that they do sell for about 500,000 and 1 million kroner a day. And that's just in soft drugs. That's what I've heard. And when you're talking about 500,000 kroner, that's equivalent to about 50,000 pounds.
Do you think that's right?
Could be. Could be, yeah. Because it's a lot of smoking. A lot. But I mean, we're proud for that too, you know. We like that.
Rozinga Mangese is in charge of the finances in Christiania, and he recognizes the delicate balance involved.
Christiania does not take any sort of tax or doesn't make any money from the hash market because it keeps our economies separate.
Yeah. It's kind of, does it ever rankle that quite so much money is clearly, I mean, those guys are raking it in.
We have to be a little bit honest and say that even though the economies are separated and we don't make any money directly from the hash market, of course the fact that there's such a big hash market here and that there's so many people who come through Christiania with purposes pertaining to that market, that of course also has an effect on our economy. For instance, we have cafes and a bakery and a greengrocers right close to Pusher Street. And I think a great deal of that turnover, of course, has to do with the clientele that comes and buys hash or smokes hash and so on. So we can't say that there's no effect, but we don't make any money directly. We don't tax the cannabis sale.
At the end of the 80s, Christiania acquired a degree of stability. The commune reached an agreement with the government that guaranteed its existence in exchange for curtailing some of its freedoms. It was time for the inhabitants to settle down and plan for the future.
We had this first deal with the state, so we thought, well, now we have to do something. We really have to believe that we have to build this place and create the basic needs. That is so important for people that they can have a sink and a water tap in the kitchen suddenly.
And building for the future didn't mean just building sewers. It also meant building families. Alan's partner, Gisa Iverson, has also contributed her memories to the Christiania archive.
I was just before 30, and I was sitting in Bali at that time. I had my own clothing company, and I made production in Bali. So I traveled down there a lot, and I was working alone, and I was pretty much alone, you know. So I was sitting on this beach where there were many business people, and I was looking at this woman being about 40 years old, you know, and she was running around in a G-string, you know, on the beach, like, making herself, I don't know what it's called, for men, you know.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there on this cafe, you know, and I was looking at her, and I was thinking, when I'm 40, I'm not running around like that, you know. I have a husband and I have kids when I'm 40. So that was my decision. And then I came home and I called to Ellen. It's true.
With the rudimentary plumbing and the basic heating, it might have been a challenge bringing up kids in Christiania. Not so, according to Gita.
It has been very, very nice, actually, because many of the neighbors also have kids, more or less the same age, you know. So there has been a big group of kids growing up together, you know, and going in and out of the houses, and that has been really, really nice.
Jeanette Mortensen, another contributor to the archive, has similar memories.
Have you seen the house in the tree out in Düsen?
Yeah.
When they were younger, they slept out there all the summer, and we just have to give them, you know, like this barbecue, one-time barbecue, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you give them this and some sausage and some bread and some corns, you know, and then they made their food out there, and they lived there all the summer holiday, more or less, and just went home for a shower. They didn't even go home for a shower. No, they went into the bathhouse. And, you know, we never saw them. We just had to feed them. Yeah, it was fun. The children, they really loved it out here. They did.
It wasn't all tree houses and barbecues, though. Gita Iverson again.
The one concern, and that was, I had a fear of my kids ending up being pushers, you know, or ending up smoking too much hash. That was kind of like my only concern about.
Did you do anything specific to try to protect them from that or keep them away from it? Or?
Yeah, I did. They were not allowed to go in Pusher Street, you know. At one point, Solsik, our daughter, she was becoming friend with one of the pusher's daughter. And then she came home and she said, oh, then we just went to this pusher daddy, you know. Then we got 50 kroners to go and buy pizza, you know, and she never got money like that from home, you know. And then I said, you know, after she came home, I could hear, you know, it was, you know, money hanging around Pusher Street. You know, she was like 12 years old, you know, or something, I don't know, 11, 12. Then I said, okay, you can be with your friend, but you have to be here. I don't want you hanging around there. So I was very strict about that. And they were so small that I could do it. So actually then it was not so interesting anymore, you know. So I kind of spoiled their relationship in this way. Mm. I liked the girl. There was nothing wrong with her, but I didn't want them to hang around there. Yeah.
Lisa Ortegainer worried too about the unusual and unconventional childhood Christiania offered.
Well, I felt that a lot of grown-ups were too preoccupied with the children, that the children sort of were maybe not, sometimes not included enough, that people were a bit sort of preoccupied with their own grown-up lives. So I was always wondering how these children were going to turn out, and I was really worried about it. And they've turned out really amazingly. I'm very impressed, actually.
The social experiment that Kjell Olesen had given his blessing to was beginning to yield results. 2 decades after its creation, Christiania's collection of hippies, squatters and dreamers had not only created a physical community, but had created a complex functioning society, true to its ideals of collective property, self-reliance, democratic discussion, communal care and non-violence. Where some saw chaos, the residents saw order, as one of their more prominent members, Joker, explains here in a Radio 3 Sunday feature from 2005.
We are actually in anarchy. We don't have leaders. We don't have a mayor or an emperor or a chief. We are actually living in an anarchy. There's a big difference between anarchy and chaos. When some right-wing politicians talk about anarchy and chaos, they switch the word like this. But in my head, there's a big difference. Anarchy is actually people living together, taking care of each other. Altogether, we have 9 or 10 rules, which evolved during the years. We have this rule about the hard drugs. We had to throw hard drugs out. Then we had a problem with biker gangs. We have to throw out a biker gang. Rules about weapons and violence and bulletproof vests and bikers' collars, these ugly pictures they have on their back, these violent bikers. We don't want stolen goods. We don't want fireworks. Rules that came during the years.
And the society that's been created in Christiania is one that might have some lessons for the outside world. Helen Jarvis is a senior lecturer in social geography at Newcastle University.
I think what we can learn is a much more imaginative approach to the sort of holistic and integrated life, a life based on all aspects of creative activity in market-led economies around the world, not just Denmark, certainly not just the UK. I've been in Australia, which is apparently a place least touched by the global financial crisis, and yet there too, young people are facing an impossibly unaffordable housing market. The sort of conventional aspiration of that owner-occupied single-family dwelling is going to be completely unachievable for a vast majority of young people growing up today. It's also unimaginative, unsustainable, and pretty isolating for the more and more one-person households that we find emerging today.
As part of her studies into work-life balance, Helen spent some time in Christiania. She was inspired by the way people there were able to live very rich lives with very little money. And particularly, one woman who earned a small amount of money making greeting cards and other homemade crafts.
I was inspired by her story because I felt that she was a sort of ordinary citizen, that in any other circumstances she would be trapped in a soulless apartment block on state benefits with very little contact with the wider community. Whereas growing up from the age of 16 and then raising a child in Christiania, she had flourished as a craftsperson, as a member of a community that's rich in so many things. So hers was a very inspiring story.
Christiania and its citizens may have rejected conventional forms of wage slavery and the alienating work-life balance of the mainstream labour market, but living there is actually very hard work. A lot of time is spent chopping wood, patching up your roof, or doing your own plumbing. Consequently, Christiania's residents are very practical. When these hard-won skills were turned to the question of transport in their car-free community, it led to the birth of the Christiania bike, the big tricycle with the box on the front that has become one of the icons of not just Christiania, but now all of Copenhagen. That's what Simon Davis found when he visited in 2008 for the BBC4 series Tales from Copenhagen.
Christiania bikes are ubiquitous on the streets of Copenhagen. For an environmentally conscious city, they are the ideal form of transport and make for a far less stressful school run.
So these are the famous Christiania bikes?
Yes, and you can go and buy milk and bread and all this stuff, you know, and it's very... If you have small children, this
is the original concept of these was live in Christiania, drive around in these, be mobile, be free. Now, look at them, they're everywhere. It's become a business.
You have to make a living, I mean.
Because I would imagine that in the early 1970s when it was set up, it was much more idealistic than it is
sure
now.
Sure, it was.
Much more idealistic.
Of course.
The idea of making money, the idea of capitalism was anathema.
Of course.
Simon Davis seemed pretty convinced that Christiania's ethos didn't encompass business. But it appeared to me, on the contrary, that Christiania is alive with entrepreneurs of every kind. From the bike shops to the women's blacksmith, to the galleries, food shops, restaurants and cafes that populate downtown, Christiania is full of businesses. However, these companies are more than merely machines for profit maximisation. but give equal weight to the values and experiences many businesses marginalise, especially play. Play, of course, is a high priority in Christiania, and not just for kids. In this clip from Niels Vest's film Christiania, You Have My Heart, we hear a group of impromptu buskers singing about life in the free town.
La 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 la
la la. It's no joke being broke, so I'll have a smoke in Christiania, one of the lines from that little ditty. Buskers, performers and singing are commonplace on the streets of Christiania, and its renovated communal buildings have acquired a special place in the hearts of both globally famous artists and Copenhagen's music lovers. Eugene Graham is a concert promoter who washed up in Christiania over 30 years ago.
Any venue in Christiania has a different atmosphere than a normal venue in the city, and a lot of musicians. The buildings are kind of pristine, if you like, state-of-the-art buildings built by military, and if you look at any country in the world, if the military built a building, it's always to the highest specifications. I mean, the Grey Hall we have was designed by the same guy who designed the Houses of Parliament. So it has this beautiful bent wooden beam, looks like a cathedral inside, so... You know, bands, people like Patti Smith or lots of other bands, they just take one look of a building and say, I want to play there. We who march against the war, true allies! I think since the beginning of Christiania, theatre and music and, if you like, various individual performance art forms have always been kind of nurtured in Christiania as, like, accepted on a street level.
Just thinking back over the last 30 years of being here, just give me a sense of, you know, the sort of international stars and the biggest names that have come and played here.
Yeah, well, working backwards from now, 2 years ago we did two concerts with Patti Smith, with Black Rebel Motorcycle Club, Prodigy. I saw Beck in Lopin before anybody. Lopin is a place that people come and play before they become really big and famous. And then sometimes after they become famous, they ask to come back and play there, but... You see bands like Beck or the Arctic Monkeys or something just before anybody hears them.
Yeah.
So Christiania is a great place for that.
And the promoters know that this is a place to come and test your rising band or to raise their profile?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, all the promoters know. I mean, the Grey Hall and Lopin and Christiania are places where almost everybody wants to play. They can probably make more money in the bigger venues in the city, but many of the acts prefer to play in Lopin, which takes about 500 people, and in the Grey Hall, which takes about 1,500 people, rather than play for 2,000 in the city, because they just like the venue and it's just like real rock and roll.
And has Bob Dylan come and played here?
In Christiania's 25th birthday, he came and he did two performances, one acoustic and one electric, and for a knockdown fee. It was quite a phenomenal event.
Tell me more.
Well, actually, I'm not a Bob Dylan fan, so I got my ticket and I gave it to a good friend.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways.
And it wasn't long after Bob Dylan played here that Christiania came under real threat. From the Christiania archives, Alan Lausten again.
And then we have this new right-wing government. They have this plan that in half a year they want to everything be changed, and they were sending police here to be like, now they want to show that they were in charge and they were in control. And but then I guess they was really surprised that we fight so hard back. I mean, and the support we get. I mean, I was surprised too.
It's a hard rain, you're gonna fall.
The new government was elected in 2001. A coalition that included the far-right Danish People's Party, who have been amongst Christiania's fiercest critics. they decided to take a far more confrontational approach to that of the previous administration and made it clear that they wanted to get rid of Christiania.
The whole town exploded, you know, and people was like coming from all over. I mean, people was continues to come, you know, and it was so many people, you know, and then they came completely out of control.
There were pitched battles on the site of Christiania. Starting in 2007, the commune was raided several times. People were evicted, houses were demolished, and barricades were put up. Radio 3 spoke to the minister involved.
The man charged with implementing plans for normalising Christiania is Karsten Jarlov, the government's director of palaces and properties. What does it mean, normalising? First Jarlov, then Joker.
A new model which basically means that in some respects concerning ownership, concerning rent, Christiania will move closer to the rest of Danish society. So in future, Christianites will have to pay rent like other people in Denmark. There will be a big possibilities for restoration of the old barracks building. The fortifications will be renovated. Some houses will have to be removed on the fortifications in order to make it look more original and to be a better recreational area for both Christiania and the rest of Copenhagen. And there will be possibilities for a quite substantial amount of new construction in the area.
I think the right-wing government of Denmark is attacking the values of living in a collective, the values of being against war, the values of being... We believe in another way.
Despite all of this pressure, support for Christiania amongst much of Copenhagen remained very strong. The government simply could not force them out. It was time for talking. However, the people who lived there were divided over how to approach the negotiations and indeed whether to talk to the government at all. Complicating the situation was one of the bedrocks of Christiania's democracy, that no decision can ever be made without unanimous support. Everything has to be put to a meeting and agreed by everyone. Here's Tina Brild again talking to Amy Staracheski.
Tell me more about the common meetings.
Awful. Those I have been to, sometimes I have been invited because I had to say something. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't listen. They had their opinion and it was very, very difficult to come and say, listen, there is something here. Because at that meeting, everybody has his own role.
And yet, frustrating as it may be, consensual democracy is a vital part of Christiana society. And according to Hulda Mader, another contributor to the archive, it can be a vital negotiating token.
Well, I mean, every time they say, oh, we think we should do this, I said, yes. Can we make an agreement? We said, no, we have to go back and talk to the fellows meeting. And the fellows meeting said no, and we came back and said no. They said no, but and they get angry, and we said, we can try again. And then the decision can take months. Which is good for us and very bad for that. But that system cannot deal with stuff like that. That cannot deal with people who can say no, not like to their face, but just by action. That's why we got the snail down at the front of. Have you seen that snail that's made? Yeah. Because there was one politician who said that when we have closed down Christiania, the snail will again be the slowest.
As Christiania tried to broker a deal with the government to guarantee its continued existence, the pressure grew on everyone, especially Gita Iversen.
We arranged a big meeting in the Grey Hall, and there came about 500 people. And before the meeting really started, there was one guy who doesn't pay the rent in Christiania, and who used to take a lot of time in the common meetings, talking, and interrupting, and he just hit another guy before the meeting started, and nobody did anything. And it was terrible. Now I get affected because this meeting, it has made a big negative impact on my life. Because we tried to set it up, we had like certain things we had to discuss, we had try to make a structure so that people would discuss this thing. And we had tried to get some people to rule the meeting, you know. But it went totally chaotic, you know. People were just like talking about their own agenda and not talking about those things. And, you know, it just went chaotic. And then I was standing in front of them and tried to put it on the track again. You know, and it just went chaotic. Nothing came out of it. Christiania was split in two. And it was like a yes and a no group, you know. And the pushers, they were kind of like saying no because it would ruin their business or whatever, you know. And it's kind of like if there was not taking any decisions, it would be a no, you know. So it was kind of like, in my reality, they were interested in just obstructing the meeting. I just got so angry. I was so frustrated. First, that one hit the other, you know. And the whole thing about trying to set up this thing so it works and people not respecting it, you know. And then this thing about this pusher guy trying to obstruct the meeting. If it came to that point, you know. And then when you make a meeting, you're also cleaning up after the meeting, you know. So we were cleaning up, this group arranged it, and we went to Woodstock and drank a beer, and I was home about 3 o'clock. Then I got up at 6, 7 in the morning. My kids were going to school. And then they called me from this media bureau, Reuters it's called, who's sending out news for the rest of the media. And they wanted an interview with me. And I was just, I had not been sleeping long, and I was just so pissed off that, I'm not very diplomatic, you know. So I'm just saying what I think and feel and whatever. So I was just saying what I think and feel about the whole meeting, you know. And they taped it and sent it to all the news in Denmark.
And actually, afterward, my wife went to the media, and she said that it was controlled by pushers who just forced the rest of the citizen to not accept the deals, and it was we were ruined by gangsters, and I was like, ah, I said, Gita, man, you cannot say like this in public television in prime time. You cannot do like that. I mean, it's a suicide. Come on. Suddenly you could feel the public opinion, you know, because suddenly you hear the politician, it's just run by gangsters, and so we can just clear the area, and we have there's no point of making any kind of debate with these guys, because they're run by gangsters, and we just clear the area by force. So I went out, you know. Then I went to this media, and I said, please, I want to speak to, and I mean the completely opposite, you know. And suddenly, you know, she was in the television, I was in the television, and we said opposite the way, you know. I was like, wow, what a disaster, you know.
Then they made a meeting. It was really hard. You know, I had not been sleeping very much, and I felt very threatened. And I got very confused and blah, blah, blah. And then I got very afraid. Because the pushers, they set up a meeting in the evening, and they wanted me to go there, you know. They wanted to throw me out, and I got so afraid, you know. And I was totally like now I'm crying, but at that time I was crying. I had been crying the whole day because too much going on, you know. Yeah. Also, I mean, I was also upset about the whole thing with Christiania and all this, you know. So I didn't went to this meeting. Alan, he went and blah, blah. And then they've never done anything to me. But I felt that my life was threatened.
I mean, I know we disagree, but I also think that she is she has too much fear in her life, you know. Mm. I have too much belief, maybe. But But it doesn't mean that, I mean, I can respect that people have fear in their life, but they shouldn't bring their fear to my life. Even if it's my wife, you know.
Solens varme, månens magt, ærer jordens regenter. Fylder krop og sjæle ud. Dit bud, dit bud, hvad du nu forventer.
Then suddenly, earlier this year, the government blinked. They agreed to hand Christiania over to its residents on a part sale, part rent basis. It seems that Christiania's inability to make quick decisions may have been their best tactic. But as Kjell Ollesen argues, it is more than simply stubbornness that has brought this unexpected political victory.
As a matter of fact, I don't know what was behind the new attitude at the government. I don't know. Aside from the fact that, you know, we are in the middle of an election campaign. If Christiania was a topic, a real topic, if they had said no and boom, confrontation, the vast majority of the population would say, what the hell is going on? You are crazy. We want Christiania. And that has, I think, the government has realized that fact.
In some quarters, though, people think that this victory may still have been bought at too high a cost. Gita Iverson again.
I can see that it has become more and more boring to live here. Because, as I said in the start, there was much more freedom and possibilities. And now the government are so restrictive, you know. In former days, there was this specific law about Christiania that said that we didn't have to follow the normal laws.
No, you know? Exempt.
And I think this was very important because that gave the freedom to just be spontaneous, you know. And now it's like you have to apply, you know, and now it's becoming more and more normalized. Slowly. And, you know, if you build like this, maybe they want you to tear it down so you don't build. And, you know, it's getting more and more restricted and more boring, I think. So that is actually what I think about the future.
My impression, though, is that there will be a feeling of optimism about the future as Christiania celebrates its 40th birthday. It promises to be some party, according to Charlotte the Blacksmith.
This year will be something extraordinary, so it will be for 10 days, so I hope I will...
Are you going to last all 10 days?
No, I mean, it's too hard. It's also, I always find myself, you know, from birthdays in the middle of, like, music everywhere. I'm like, shit, now it's too much.
And Kjell Ollesen is also looking forward to the celebrations.
As a matter of fact, I have been invited. But I'm out of the country at that time. But they have asked me to write something which will be presented to the audience. So in that way, I'll be present. What I have realized is that you see a new generation turning up in Christiania. It was a problem because when you looked around, many of the old boys, they go older but now new generations are taking over, and when I am going to address the audience, I will say what an important impact Christiania could give to society, regarding the whole attitude, not only being good consumers but concentrating on other ideas and values of a modern society.
And Tina Brild agrees there's plenty in this unlikely story that's worth celebrating.
One day people will say, what in earth was going on at that time? Why did they accept those people to come and take the most beautiful area in Copenhagen? And that you have some of the answers there. And that's what I have said all the time. This area is so beautiful and it is so wonderful that the poor people from Copenhagen can come and have a nice living place. instead of on the other side in Holmen, where they have expensive houses. So I like that the poor people have, they have the beautiful earth in Copenhagen, the most beautiful. So they have to take care of it.
It's a rather leaden, rather slow Tuesday afternoon in Christiania, and if you close your eyes and you can't see the street art and the patched up windows and the vernacular architecture created by the locals, you kind of could be anywhere. People just peacefully going about their business, some kids hanging out on the corner, a few tourists drifting by. This is a place that, for all its outlandishness and occasional freakishness, is actually incredibly grown up. The Minister of Finance, Risinger, who I met earlier today, the man who looks after the books here in Christiania, just told me he is planning to launch a Christiania Share, where I think members of the public and supporters will be able to support the community and have their little share in the collective good here. And after a couple of very pleasant, intriguing days, I think I might take him up on it.